Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Check it out when you get a chance. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter and read articles and listen to archives. Listen to this show. And after it's off the air live, it'll be up for 24 hours on a replay. If you just can't get enough of my voice, and I can understand that, just check it out when you get a chance and at jbsba.com. Somebody else who can understand that is Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Letter. She just can't get enough of my voice either. That's the reason she comes back week after week. That and all the money we pay her. Joan, welcome back.
Good morning, I think.
You love it when I put words in your mouth, don't you?
Uh-huh. Happens all the time.
It's my favorite thing. It's your favorite thing to happen,
right,
isn't it?
It's your favorite thing.
Well, Joan, how much history did we witness this week?
Boy, it seems like a whole lot, particularly yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, are we all going to remember where we were, you think?
Well, I would like to think so. I would like to think that this is an historic moment. I just sort of, I'll feel better when I really know that all the opposition forces have been, you know, run out of Iraq or, you know, controlled in some way.
What are those guys hanging on for? You think it's just that they're realizing that they got nowhere to go, they got nowhere to turn. They're now seen as pariahs in their own country, and there are people who know who they are and they know what they've done. And that now that the jig is up, so to speak, that they're just fighting just to be because they are evil or something. I don't know.
Well, what else would they do?
You know, they could lay their arms down and say, "I'm sorry."
Well, but if they really believe in Sodom's insanity, they're going to fight to the
yeah.
end. I would
well,
think.
Well, that's the evil part of it, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Sure. Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's the evilness that he's and so apparently. Apparently, one evil person can breed evilness.
And I think it's also easier, rather than to try to retain control, it's easier to withdraw and try sniper attacks or guerrilla attacks on
yeah.
the occupying force.
Well, it's upsetting that we had some more casualties yesterday. We lost a Marine and we had some injured. And then, you know, here we got on the one side of the city, we got people, you know, tearing down the edifices of Saddam's regime, and on the other side, we got people who are dying for it, still dying for it. It's
right.
really an interesting juxtaposition there, isn't it?
Oh, it's true. It'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out.
Yeah. Well, what do you think will happen? What are your thoughts on how what could be the long term implications of this?
You mean for the Arab world?
We can start there. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean it. I think it's going to take a long time to build this nation back and build its institutions back, because the thing is, a lot of people in this country, in that country, know no other ruler than Saddam Hussein. Because even though he wasn't elected president until 1979, I think his party took control in the late 60s.
Where the U.S. and Europe and Japan is an aging population, are aging populations, the Middle East is not. Most of their people are under... I think over half of their people are under 25 or maybe under 30.
Well, that's an interesting point. I'd never looked at it that way.
Throughout the Middle East, and so consequently, and that's true in Iraq, so consequently, maybe as many as half of the population in Iraq has never known anything but Saddam.
Right. And you'd have to be probably over 40, which to me is just incredibly old to know anything else.
Yeah. But the thing is, now here's something that's interesting, Joan. One of the things that I think is maybe an eye opener in Islam, is especially in the Arab world of Islam, and that is that the only enemy of Arabs of Islam has been Israel, or maybe the U.S.
Okay.
So now, in other words, of Arab descent people, for example, Palestinians.
Yes.
But now they are realizing, maybe for the first time, that one of their own was actually horribly oppressing their own, you know, their own people.
Well, let me ask you this: did they really not know?
Well, you know what? It seems that they maybe they didn't know. Or at least, let me put it this way, maybe they just didn't want to know, or maybe they were in denial. But the point, I think the point is, whether they did or they didn't, the point is it's abundantly clear now that the only enemy they have is not Israel or the U.S., and if the U.S. can go in there and deliver this miracle of freedom and then literally back out over the next year or so and say, hey, it's your country, you know, have a ball, then don't you think that that could create the kind of goodwill that could last a long time and maybe settle a lot of conflict down?
Well, I think it could theoretically, but I think getting from here to there is going to take an awful lot of work because you have different parties in that country.
Yeah.
It's not like the Democrats and Republicans. I mean, these are people who would like to kill the other party.
The Kurds, the Sunnis, and the Shiites.
Right.
Primarily.
Yeah, that's a combustible mixture right there.
It really is. But
I'm not saying we can't do it, but I just think it's going to be a hard job and take a long time.
One of the reasons why I think it might work, though, is Iraq is a highly literate country.
True.
And so those people are probably more able to govern themselves than, say, the Saudi Arabians are.
Well, and the Kurds have certainly been doing it for quite a while
in
their own little part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what happened to that little part that got carved out there.
Well, I think the people who are trying to reestablish a new government there are hoping that won't happen. That it'll stay part of the whole group. And of course, they've also got Turkey to deal with up there. You know,
right.
Turkey would probably like to have the Kurdish area up there.
Right.
So with the oil and everything especially. So there's a potential tinderbox up there. In that whole region, there's no question about it. But, you know, to me, what needs to happen, Joan, is more and more Iraqis need to get on television, on Al Jazeera, and say what they were saying yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, America is not our enemy. America is our friend. America freed us.
Yeah, and Al Jazeera has to broadcast that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure that they won't. I think that they will.
Well, apparently they have been. They did show Iraqis celebrating yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, that's what's got to happen, and that kind of thing could really bode well for, the rest of this century. So basically, I think what we're saying is if the war is over, the PR fight has really just begun, hasn't it?
Absolutely. That's a good way to put it.
That's kind of where we are right now, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
All right, we're going to talk about how this whole thing is going to affect the economy and the world, according to Kiplinger, right after these messages. It's 20 after. Then we're going to move on to some other things that are not related to the war a little bit later in the hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And rolling with Joe Cocker and Joan Pride. Doesn't get any better than that, does it, Joan?
Excuse me?
What a crazy man, Joe Cocker. Good. thank you for being here, folks. Thank you for letting me have some fun. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're talking to Joan Pride. Joan, one of the things that you guys pointed out, I thought this was an interesting piece here. You said that it took us 42 days to oust the Taliban in Afghanistan. It took us, and get the Al-Qaeda out of there. It took us 78 days to push the Serbs out of Kosovo. Gulf War I, back in 91, lasted 43 days. And this one is, what, 3 weeks old?
3 weeks old. And I think that's an important point about Gulf War I, because people keep referring to it as the 100-hour war, and it really wasn't.
Right.
We conducted a lot of airstrikes, if I'm not mistaken, to kind of soften the place up before we actually went in. And I saw a statistic on the news last night that we actually used more troops and had more people killed in that war than in this war.
So far.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But,
so
Joan, if a war is nothing else if not about real estate.
Right.
And all we did in Gulf War I was to push them out of a teeny tiny little country. I've been to Kuwait. It's not very big, folks. A teeny tiny little country. We just pushed them out and back a little bit. But we spent 21 days. Our military in 21 days conquered for their own people a country.
Now, do you account for the difference? The way you account for that difference, is it this different strategy this time, the different objective, or technology?
I think it's technology. Because we were able to go in and literally, you know, pinpoint targets and take out key command and control locations. I think that's a lot of it.
Without carpet bombing an entire city. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean think about this. If we had not had that technology, we wouldn't have been able to have fought that war from the population centers. I mean, by the time our guys got there, the reason we've had so few casualties is by the time our guys met the enemy, they were already in disarray.
That's true.
Have you seen how many sorties have been flown?
Oh,
33,000 sorties.
Right. And they've dropped
in
how
three
many?
Weeks.
Tens of thousands
43,000. No,
yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Just under 33,000 bombs.
Yeah. But thousands of sorties.
Yeah.
Thousands.
I couldn't believe there was 33,000 sorties.
Well, there was one guy from, I guess, one carrier saying, at any given moment, I got a guy going out, a guy coming in, and a guy getting ready.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And their flight's about 10. I mean, I don't know how they do it. They're in that plane for at least 10 hours at a time.
800-531-3815. If you have a comment or a question you'd like to log in with us, 800-531-3815. And it surprises me, Joan, that there was that many, but that's an interesting paragraph that's maybe one of the most interesting ones that I've read in a long time, to compare the differences in those two wars. And I'll tell you, that's a statistic that I think, you know, maybe would be good to send. We ought to clip this out of the Kiplinger letter, Joan, and send it to Iraq. I mean to Iran and to our buddy Kim Jong-il over in North Korea.
That's right.
You know, I think we ought to send them a little card. You can clip that out and put it in a little note card, a little quick, you know, hey, how you doing? We missed you. You know, one of those kind of cards. After the war, what's it going to look like, Joan?
Well, after the war, and looking back at our country, you know, there was, I think we had tried to disabuse the notion that the minute the war is over, everything is suddenly going to be wonderful again. So we're calling it, in our turn of phrase, a lousy spring economy. And we're even allowing for the possibility of a contractional, but we aren't using the R word, I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
The dreaded R word.
Mm-hmm. Spending is frozen, you say.
Right, and by spending we mean, we're saying consumers are retreating, but I think the key point is that businesses haven't opened up their wallets yet. That's the thing that we've been waiting for how long now?
Since fourth quarter 2000.
Okay.
So we're talking
two
and a half.
Start up again.
Oh yeah.
We kept saying that, you know, that the businesses will ride to the rescue here and help out the consumers who have been carrying the load for so long, and we kind of expected that to happen the end of last year, and it really hasn't started yet.
But they closed their wallet fourth quarter 2000, and they haven't opened it back up yet.
Right. Exactly.
But hopefully. Another thing you guys report is that and I think it's in this section, that profits are going to be up a little bit. And one of the things that could help that an awful lot, Joan, would be if oil prices go down.
And they're already going down, and one would expect them to go down even more now that we've got hopefully some good news in Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if we could establish oil at a much lower price, and if it could become less volatile, think about what that could do to the long-term projections of companies. If we could count on oil prices not being so volatile, and because that's the main inflationary item in the basket of goods right now, isn't it?
Right, and Iraq had always been kind of a linchpin since their oil reserves are so huge.
Yeah, second only to Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. We've got a lot more to come. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot. And did I say that it's 29 after? If I didn't, it is.
He inspires smile. small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need, and there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for hanging around with us this morning. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, one of the things that you guys say is that the Fed may try to help things out a little bit by doing some things that will benefit the economy. What would that look like?
Well, if we're saying it would look like a quarter point rate cut. We're saying maybe this month or next month. Now, my only question is how much would that really help, since rates can't go much lower at this point.
Well, what are they, at 1.25 now?
I think so. I mean, it's historic.
And now, you know, I predicted that they wouldn't do anything until September, and they would actually raise rates a quarter of a point.
It'll be interesting to see.
Well, I don't think that they'll lower rates again, although this last time, I have to be honest, and I did predict on the day that the Fed met that they might, would lower rates maybe a quarter at that moment, because I thought that they thought that the economy, you know, needed that little symbolic shot in the arm.
Yeah.
But I do think anything that they do with rates, as you say, with rates is so low, anything they do with regard to rates is symbolic, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing. It has to be at this point.
It can't. There's nothing
psychological.
There's nothing significantly beneficial about going from a 4.25 prime to 4% prime.
Right.
I mean, if you can afford 4, you can afford 4.25.
Yeah, I would think so.
So that's it's symbolic, and so that's the reason I think one of the things that you guys are also saying, or maybe I've read it recently, that they may be working on some other things that they can do. They can improve the liquidity, can't they?
Well, in terms of, they do have other, you know, everybody focuses on their ability to lower either the discount rate or the Fed funds rate, but that's not all that they do.
But they can put money into the economy, can't they?
Well, I would think so. I mean, in terms of what they loan to banks.
Buying securities and buying U.S. securities and that sort of thing.
Right.
They can do that. And so, but also they still need help, Joan, on the fiscal side. That's the monetary side. They need help on the fiscal side, and that means tax cuts, doesn't it?
Well, at least to a certain degree, it certainly will mean tax cuts this year.
And there's movement there, not enough, not as much as the president wants.
Well, there's sort of some interesting wrangling going on the Hill right now, because, as you know, the president wanted about $750 billion.
Right.
And what the budget resolution was moving toward about $350. But now there's kind of an odd thing going on where they might not completely try to reconcile and get one budget resolution and just sort of leave a permission in the budget resolution for the House to approve a higher amount.
Mm-hmm.
But that's going to get sticky if that happens.
Yeah, but, you know, I want the president to get all that he asked for, but we've got to get something, and we may have to resign ourselves to something a friend of mine says. He says, you know, you might not like where we are, but you got to like the trend.
Well, so, and that's exactly what your friend the Hammer said the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Your friend the Hammer, I mean House Majority Leader Tom DeLay.
Yeah.
Who pretty much conceded that half a loaf is better than none.
Absolutely. You got to like the trend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we get half today, we'll get the other half tomorrow.
Right.
So, let's not throw the baby out with the dishwater. And if you want any more metaphors, Joan, I've got a bunch of them.
I think we've had enough.
The stock market is poised for a recovery based on what, Joan?
Well, based on the evidence of what's been going on in the last couple of days. And I guess, you know, as we keep seeing good news in Iraq, you know, we've had a little bit of volatility that the market goes up and then takes some profits and then back into that cycle. But mm-hmm. then maybe there will be an upward trend now.
Yeah. Well, I was surprised that the market went down yesterday.
Well, they're so strange. You know, I guess they had already accounted. They were going up the day before when it looked like, you know, Baghdad was being taken. And
right.
I guess they just sort of got over that yesterday.
Counterintuitive, thy name is Dow Jones.
That's right. That's right.
at least it's counterintuitive for me. And that tells you, now, folks, now you know why I do a small business show and not a stock market show. the stock market guys are not worried about me at all. I can promise you that. Joan, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about post-war politics, especially global post-war politics. What's that going to do? And I'm looking forward to this so much, folks, because it gives me another chance to diss the French. I never want to miss an opportunity to diss the French. France can, well, you know what they can do. It's 22. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 till. Let me remind you, coming up with the show straight ahead, Bill Hubbard will join us. After that, Gary Moore, who is a stock market expert. He'll be giving us some news on that. And then Jan Yeager is going to talk to us about time management. And Doug Stiles is our resident CPA. He's going to get us all geared up for April 15th, which is coming up real soon. Joan, I know you've already filed your tax returns, haven't you?
I certainly have.
You're disgusting.
Thank you.
You're disgusting. I can't
It's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, she's with Kiplinger Editors, as you know, and they've got a website that I'd like to tell you about, Kiplinger.com, KIPLINGER.com, and that's where you can go to just go noodle around there. There's lots of good stuff that you'll find that I think you'll find interesting that's free. That's free, and then they also have some publications that you can subscribe to. You can also subscribe to another online feature where you can get the letter online, the one that Joan and I work off of. You can get it online. You can also get it by email. You can also get it by hard copy. I get it all three ways. I can't get enough. But that's the Kiplinger letter. You can also get the... Now, Joan, is the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter, which comes twice a week, are those also available electronically?
Yes, they all are.
Okay.
And they come every other week.
Yeah, they're biweekly. And so so all that's available online or hard copy, and they also have a magazine.
That's right. It's a monthly magazine called Kiplinger's Personal Finance, available
right.
on newsstands.
Right, and that comes as she said monthly, and on newsstands, and also there's a phone number, Joan.
That's right. Our toll free number is 800-544-0155.
Right, Joan. Let's move on and talk about post war politics.
There isn't enough time left to talk
about
post-war politics.
It's hard to it's hard for me to imagine me having more disdain for the French than I had after 86, when they wouldn't let us use their airspace, when we were taking out, when we were neutralizing Libya. And of course, as you know, after that we haven't heard a peep out of what's his name, Muammar Gaddafi, whatever his name is. We haven't heard a peep out of him since 86, and they wouldn't let us fly over their airspace. And so I've been mad at them since then. And I was mad at them before this last stuff. And now that we know what Saddam Hussein has done, and it's abundantly clear that they were supporting him, they were literally propping him up with support through.
Well, their weapons are killing some of our guys.
Exactly right.
And gals.
It is not my disdain for them is now permanent.
And I'm sure that now they're going to come crawling back in order to, in the hopes of getting. Some of the debt repaid, and I hope it needs to all be forgiven now so that Iraq can start fresh.
Demonstrating and making it abundantly clear to the world that they have no shame.
Right. Oh, yeah.
They have no shame.
And even Germany is moving away from them and aligning themselves with us again, it looks like.
Right. Well, you know what? I think the French, now you're going to be surprised to hear this, I think the French and the Germans and the Russians should be involved in the rebuilding of Iraq.
I think they should
be investing their dollars over there and helping to rebuild Iraq, but not as part of the UN.
Right.
Because if it's part of the UN, they'll be in there as part of the Security Council, in which they have a veto.
As we know.
Yeah.
Right.
Would you agree,
we did the heavy lifting, you know.
Would you agree or disagree, Joan, that would be that one of the quickest ways to be unelected for George Bush would be to give France the opportunity to veto anything with regard to the future of Iraq.
Right, and in fact, I even saw that in the papers this morning, that he has to be very careful how he handles the whole post-war political situation.
Yeah. Well, that will be interesting, and so as successful as he's been, Mr. Bush, he's still got a minefield to walk through, hasn't he?
Well, how hard do you think the UN, and I'm not talking France in per se, I'm talking
right.
about the UN, is going to push for a more political role than Bush envisions? Because, as you know, he's only talking about the UN taking a humanitarian role.
What's going to happen, Joan, is they'll try it, but Mr. I think the world has learned this, and the finality of what happens when Mr. Bush furrows his brow and gives you a level stare. Don't you think so?
Well, and the other thing too is when we send in UN troops, aren't they mostly us anyway?
Yeah. The UN has, as far as I'm concerned, the UN is neutralized, and the UN is invalid anymore, other than from a humanitarian standpoint.
Well, I also think that the coalition of the willing needs to be rewarded in some manner.
There's no question.
And I realize
about
a lot of countries only offered us moral support, but that was all they were able to give.
And you know what? It was enough.
Sure, it was.
It was enough.
Sure.
Well, the truth is, we didn't need them militarily.
Right.
God bless the English. God bless the Scottish units. The Irish units.
That's right.
The Australians. The Polish. You know, we had Polish forces over there.
We did, and I don't think we had forces from these countries, but Portugal and Bulgaria stood with us from the beginning.
Spain and Italy.
Right. I'm sorry. I should have mentioned Spain.
Yeah.
Too.
And I'm so proud of the president of Spain. I mean, those guys stood up against serious homeland opposition.
But you know who gets the biggest, I think, round of applause is Tony Blair.
Does he deserve a Nobel Prize or something?
Oh, it's a poor man. He's had a rough couple of months.
You know, I was suspect of him in the very beginning because he was part of the Liberal Labor Party over in England. But I'll tell you right now, he's a class act from Alpha to Omega, isn't he?
And he could have buckled under the pressure in his
yep.
own country, and he didn't.
That tells us an awful lot about that guy, and it tells us about our relationship with England and with Great Britain, doesn't it?
Well, I hope the people continue to back him on this.
Yeah, I think
so
too.
There did seem to be some discontent.
Well, you know, Joan, failure is an orphan. Success has a thousand fathers.
Ooh.
So I think things are going to change over there, and there already are. I think. I think the polls are already showing that. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. Stevie Nicks will take us out. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Check it out when you get a chance. A lot of good stuff there. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Joan, let's move all the way over and talk about brand backlash. On page 3, you guys report this week that there might be a possible backlash about U.S. brands around the world. Now, what's that all about?
Well, I think you've probably seen a lot of those reports, and your listeners have, too, of, you know, German restaurants refusing to serve Coca-Cola and things like that. And we worried that there would be at least a short-term dislocation because of that, and it would really depend on the length of the war how much U.S. brands would suffer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, maybe our second line really is going to ring true because we say it looks bad now, but the damage is likely to fade before long.
Don't forget what we said before the break. Success
yeah.
has a thousand fathers.
Right.
And so if you this could be a short-term thing, and momentum, as we know in sports, momentum can change quickly. So it could turn around the other way. But another thing you point out, though, I think is really important, Joan, is that some companies, rather than branding their American brand in those countries, they actually have created a local brand, more of a local presence, with local partners and local brand names and that sort of thing, so they're not really seen as an American brand in those countries. And I think that's smart.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad idea at all. And then you also have companies that may be multinationals or may not be based in the U.S. that people assume are,
mm-hmm.
and that may have trouble. And I want to put a plug in. I want to tell everybody, go out and buy French's mustard. Because that poor company has been suffering. And they keep saying, we're not French. We're not French.
Right. It was just the guy's name.
Yeah.
Yeah,
not
buy
his
French.
Fault.
Exactly. Buy French's mustard. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's like the diet candy AIDS, you know.
Right.
There used to be a little caramel kind of candy years and years ago called AIDS. I don't know
not
whatever
anymore.
Happened. Whatever happened to that company, Joan? I don't know what happened.
I haven't heard of that in years.
Talk about bad luck.
Right.
Boy, I don't know who. I mean, I remember though, 30 years ago, thinking it was a dumb name. I probably shouldn't say that. I think a lot of people benefited from that. Anyway, okay, let's move on down and talk about healthcare quickly, Joan. So we make sure we don't talk about only the war issue going on. What's new with healthcare?
Well, what we're saying is that our insurers realize that there are problems that they're trying to help out. So for example, getting people to use generics by waiving copays or getting together with manufacturers of generics to provide samples,
mm-hmm.
and even doing some cost savings, sharing those cost savings with doctors who are willing to prescribe generics
mm-hmm.
to get generics more out in the marketplace.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it can really make a difference, can it?
Yeah, but I still think in some ways it's kind of a Band-Aid that we really need further reform, especially in the whole Medicare situation, Medicare drugs.
Yeah. Oh, there's no question about it. You're exactly right. But at the same time, Joan, I mean, I've seen drugs that would cost you $75 for a prescription, and when it become genericized, it would be cutting by a third, maybe by two thirds.
That's right.
And when you've got elderly out there, I mean, that's the difference in staying warm maybe this month.
Well, that's huge.
Yeah, it really is. Let's move on over and talk about the economy. I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say about the economy and as far as business profits, Joan, over on page 4, you think it's going to gain as much as 8% this year?
And what we're saying is that's a slightly higher rate than 2002, which was 7.6%.
And that's good news for capital spending, isn't it, and for hiring?
Boy, absolutely. But it's not necessarily good news for hiring, we're saying.
It's not good news for hiring?
Well, unemployment is always a lagging indicator, so that's not going to pick up right away.
No, I think so too, but I don't think that necessarily has anything to do with profits. I think that has to do with the overall changing. I mean, there's some major paradigm shifts going on in the marketplace right now, Joan, with regard to technology and the way we do business and the whole economy moving to services rather than manufacturing.
Right. That's a good point.
I think so, and also. Another thing that will help profits, Joan, is if we can get the gas prices down, the petroleum prices down.
And I think that's coming.
Yeah, I think so, too.
There's good news coming there.
That could really help, and that could really help hold down inflation and prevent stagflation, because that's the major spike in the
right.
in the basket of
right.
goods, isn't it?
We were just talking about that last week.
Yeah, it really makes a lot of difference. China's going to be an all-star. We're about to run out of time here, Joan, but you guys also report that, and boy, we've been talking about that too, haven't we?
Boy, 8% growth next year. That's huge.
Yeah.
Now it's sort of 8% on top of what are we talking about, but still, that's big.
It's an economic tsunami. I'm telling you, folks, China is an economic tsunami that's going to take
a turn of phrase.
There's going to take some breaths away in the next generation. Joan, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim.
Good job today.
I'll be back next week.
I hope so.
Thank you.
Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and every single member of our military sending a post for us and others around the world. God bless you. God be with you. We are very proud of you. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.